Hey, everybody, it's Rick and Rob. Welcome back to the Nomad Bastard.
We're glad you're here.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm starting to get a little bit of my voice back.
I can tell. It sounds a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not as Oak Ridge boy-y.
It's not. I can actually sing some baritone now instead of just bass.
Even better.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to jump right in. And today we want to talk about pain, but I think specifically we want to talk about I want to make sure I get it right.
Okay.
Like, I want to look it up. Is it easier to stay in the pain that we know rather than the pain that we don't know?
Stay tuned, folks.
There's going to be a lot of pause and silence.
And there's going to be a whole lot of thought-provoking stuff that we got to think about how to say it gently.
Well, let's not say it gently.
Okay.
You know, is it easier to stay in the pain that we know?
So this is this is one of those catch-22 things.
Yeah.
It is
absolutely a catch-22 because that pain that you know versus the pain that you don't may be something that's good, important to you, or I don't know.
Well, I when I first saw the topic,
yeah, that's
the thing that I was thinking about was the meme or the caricature. There it goes.
Yeah,
of the little girl that's holding on to the teddy bear.
Yeah,
and Jesus or her daddy, you know, whichever one you're looking at.
Yeah,
has got a great big teddy bear that's brand new behind his back, and he's trying to take it from her. She goes like, no, but I want this one.
Yeah.
And we're not realizing that something better is waiting on her.
Yeah.
So that when I saw this topic,
yeah,
and we, you know, when we agreed to do it, that was the first thing that popped up in my mind.
You know, I thought about, you know, when I was going through, I have a OneNote
mm-hmm.
with just tons and tons of topics, right?
Mm-hmm. It,
you know, throughout the last couple months, we've either talked about or, you know,
right.
has been brought up by other people
right.
or whatever
right.
it may be. And, you know, this for me is one that I tried to think about. And what I thought about was people who maybe are sick
mm-hmm.
or disabled or addicts,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're sick, right, the pain you know what your day is going to look like,
right,
and it's as hard as it may be, it's comfortable,
mm-hmm.
right, because you've created a life around that pain,
right. You've learned to live with it,
right. That's right. You learned to live with it,
mm-hmm.
and for a lot of people, they've learned to succeed with it.
True,
right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of functioning addicts,
right. There are. I was one.
Right.
I was one. Yeah.
Or there's a lot of people who are sick that still function, right? Whether
sure.
maybe they got fibromyalgia or MS or
right.
or something. There's something wrong, right? right? And that's the pain they know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's a fear of that pain you don't know.
Yes.
Well, what happens if I get clean? What happens if I take that medicine
mm-hmm.
that now my pain is not as bad?
Right.
Right. What is my life going to look like? Because I've built my life around this pain.
Right. Right. How do I go on in a normal routine?
Yeah.
You know, having to change the routine.
Yeah.
How do I remake that normal routine?
Right. That I've had for 30 years.
I think when we are faced with something like that,
yeah.
There has to be a reliance. There has to be a reliance on experience of other people.
Yeah.
And that's part of where community comes in. But I think the most important thing is there has to be a reliance on God that his best for your life is what he's trying to show you.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think the way what I would add to that is that when you say, you know, this reliance on God.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people today will say, I rely on God, but they're not positive thinking. Right.
So, I know it's God, just a lip service thing?
Yeah, well, they believe them, right? I know God's got me.
Right.
But I don't know if that's going to work for me. You know?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Right.
I see what you're saying.
You know, and I think sometimes it's fear, right? There's so much fear around disappointment. If I believe that you're going to take, that God's going to take this pain away, and he doesn't, then I'm just let down again.
Sure.
And that's why I think that pain that I know sometimes is easier to stay in the pain that I know than the pain that I don't.
So it's an expectation?
Maybe. Maybe it is.
Yeah. I could see that. And let's quantify that a little bit, though.
All right.
And let's go with physical pain first.
Absolutely. And that's primary, I think, you know, physical's a big one.
Yeah. So,
because we know we have an all-powerful God.
True.
Right? We know that, hey, snap your fingers, God, somebody's going to be healed.
Right.
Right. You can take away that pain.
Right. Exactly. So in that physical pain, not case in point, just kind of an example.
Yeah.
My dad's youngest brother had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, still does.
Okay.
But he's in remission for it now. Clinical trials in the beginning, the original diagnosis, clinical trials that they were doing had some effect on it, but it also had some side effects with it.
Absolutely, they do.
Right. So the next, they saw that that was okay, but here's something over here that could be better.
Right.
But the side effect from that is XYZ.
Yeah.
So his choice, my uncle's choice at that time was, do I prolong this going into remission, make it take longer by staying with a clinical trial that we know.
Right.
And the things that it brings me, or do we try this clinical trial that may be faster to get to the end result, but has greater side effects?
Yeah.
And I think we, in those cases, it's just like kidney stones and kidney stone surgery. Have you ever had kidney stone surgery?
So let me just say, I haven't had kidney stone surgery, but I'm fairly certain I have kidney stones.
Right.
Because sometimes, right, I may roll over in bed, or I may just get the right way, and it's fetal position.
Oh, yeah.
Crying out, you know, pain. It's the same pain I've seen Linda go through when she had kidney stones.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I got some rolling around in there. That, and then, you know, if I get in the right position, they'll
go away.
They'll go away.
Right. So I had, Rebecca had a surgery in January of 2017. And she was out of work for 8 weeks. Couldn't go back to work.
Okay.
The second week that she's home from the hospital, she can't drive. She can't even come down the steps of from our bedroom. Right. I ended up with 5 kidney stones.
Oh, Lord.
And I'm working downtown Nashville at the time. And I was in her car.
Yeah.
Because it got a better gas mileage in my truck.
Of course.
So I call her and say,
thank God you weren't on your bike.
Exactly. There would have been no way I could have made it home on a motorcycle with kidney stones.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
So I call her and I said, this is what's going to happen. I am 99% certain that I have at least a kidney stone. I'm going to call the kids and tell them I'm going to be coming through this area. If I have to stop at your house, be ready for Dad to show up in the driveway.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the emergency room in Gallatin. So I drove from 21st Avenue, because I was working on 21st Avenue downtown at
the
time.
Wait a minute. Don't you work at a hospital?
Yeah. But here
you went to a different one.
Here's the trick. This is why, because all of the people that I could rely on to get me home and get the car home and, and make sure that Rebecca was taken care of, we're in Gallatin.
That makes sense then.
So I called some people and said, I'm on the way to the hospital in Gallatin, to the ER. Meet me there.
Yeah.
Bring your wife so that she can drive my car home. You can take me home when I get out of the ER, you know, because I'm hurting.
Yeah. It's all I'm going to do to make it to that hospital.
Exactly. Exactly. I made it to the hospital.
Yeah.
Through rush hour. And if anybody knows how the bottleneck works off of 65 on the Vietnam Veterans Boulevard in rush hour, knows what kind of situation that I was facing.
I mean, look, traffic in Nashville has been compared to the I-10 in California.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, so I made it there, crawled into the emergency room.
Yeah.
I literally on hands and knees crawled
fetal in. Fetal position crawl.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. However, they, you know, did a CT scan and found 5 kidney stones. They said, you're going to have surgery to remove some of these stones. They're too big to pass. Other ones, you know, you can pass. So I'm kicked back on this gurney in a gown and my boots. Yeah. And when they hit that morphine, dude, I was good.
Yeah.
I was good, right?
Yeah.
But I knew that the pain that I was going through and the pain that I was going to have to go through, I had no idea what the surgery was going to be like.
Yeah.
Had no clue what it was going to be like. I didn't know what kind of recovery I was going to have because I'd heard the horror stories. My brother has chronic kidney stones.
Yeah.
You know, I have family members who have, you know, bad kidney stones. I had no idea what it was going to be like. And I had no idea what it was going to be like for my wife to have to try to take care of me with kidney stones when she can't even come down the steps.
Yeah.
You know, I go home, cook dinner, take it up to the bedroom, you know, for her to eat.
Right.
Or to the den. You know, we had a den in the old house. So my point of the story is, kidney stones versus the kidney stone surgery and the things that go on with that. Now, I've come to realize some differences there since then, since I've experienced them both. But the pain that I was in versus what I was going to have to go through in the meantime, getting ready for surgery, because I had to put a stent in.
Yep.
You know, then they had to do the surgery. Then they had to take the stent out. And, you know, I had to work and I did ride the motorcycle with a stent in.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
I could see that.
It is not fun at all. But anyway, what I'm in versus what I'm facing and not in at the moment. And being in between those and making those decisions so that, number one, I still glorify God, but my family's taken care of, and the ministry that he's entrusted me with, it's his ministry.
That's
he's right. Just entrusted me with it. It is still in his plan and not my plan.
Yeah. What would you think about, you know, when we were thinking about, you know, this pain thing, I was really thinking about the people at the rescue mission.
Mm.
Right. It's not a horrible place, but it's not a great place for them to be.
Right. It's not the most comfortable.
No.
You know, there's not, you know, it doesn't have the same amenities as what we have here.
No. But that's a pain that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And they know it, right? I met a guy there, you know, wandering the halls, you know, one night that we were there preaching, and I'm talking to him, and I'm like, and I hadn't really seen him before.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, man, it's weird. You know, usually you see people kind of.
Right.
So I thought, you know, are you new here? How long have you been at the mission? And he said, no, I've been staying here about 25 years.
What?
Yeah, 25. I said, what? He said, yeah, I come in, you know, I stay the night, 25 years. I've been doing this.
And I, 25 years.
And I said, do you got a job? Are you working? He said, no. And I thought,
wow.
I thought to myself, you know, when we were talking about the pain you're in,
mm-hmm.
right? For him, It's easier to stay in that pain.
He's found that comfort in that pain.
He's comforted in that pain.
Mm-hmm.
He's comforted in the pain of knowing that at least there he's going to get a bed,
right,
and a dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I both know there's like 7 or 10 places that they can go eat every day downtown, right?
Yeah.
But it just kind of, I don't know that I can explain how that pain is better than the other.
So when we first started going to the mission, what has it been, 7 years?
It's a while. I've been going for like 5, and I think you were going like 2 or 3 before me.
Yeah. So I believe this is our 7th year. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
There was a man there. His name was Don. And Don lived at the mission, and Don and I got to be really, really good friends.
Yeah.
Come to find out, he was selling, what's that paper?
The Constitution.
The Constitution. He was selling the Constitution on the corner where I got off the interstate to drive downtown to my office. And even when they moved my office, I would still drive through there so that I could, you know, see him, wave at him, yeah, talk to him at the red light, you know, yep, that kind of thing, right?
Yep.
And I remember we were talking one morning, and the red light that he worked at was long. And I remember him saying, I'm going to be leaving the mission hopefully in about a month. I said, where are you going? He said, well, they got a place in Madison. It's kind of a transition type of housing thing that I'm getting a job, and I'm moving out there so that I can work my job and you know, move back in to what he called a productive member of society,
yeah,
which, you know, that's everybody's goal, obviously.
It should be, I think.
Right. And Don was just a sweet, gentle man. You know, you could tell that the streets had been unkind to him.
Yeah.
You know, and from our time at the mission and talking with him, you know, out on the street, and there were several times that, you know, I'd ask him, hey, man, how's it going? It's rough. You know, it'd be snowing outside. So I'd run around the corner to McDonald's and, you know, grab him a hot coffee and some hash browns and breakfast, you know, bring it back to him, and, you know, some gift cards,
yeah,
and things like,
yeah,
that. You know, so you try. And he and I got to be friends, you know, over the years that I knew him. But he was scared to death of failing again. He was scared of relapsing and ended up back where he started at the mission.
Yeah.
To a point to where when the moving day came, he put it off another month.
Yeah.
Now, he knew what was going to be waiting for him there. It was going to be his own room. It's going to be his own bathroom. Right. It was going to be his, you know, it was like
privacy for the first time in years.
In years.
Yeah.
Years, because he had been in the mission. I think 7 years he had been in the mission at that point.
And if you walk down the halls, right, it's communal, right? There's dorms.
There's, yeah.
There's no bathroom. There's
exactly.
No privacy.
No privacy whatsoever.
Yeah.
But Don was so scared to leave that pain that he was in,
yeah,
of not having the privacy, of not being able to function in the way that he thought, that it crippled him to where he put it off another month. And I remember after he actually moved out there, I didn't see him for about 6 months.
Okay.
You know, and I was praising God every, yeah, day that I drove by there and didn't see Don, you know, selling the paper. And, you know, then we'd go back to the mission and
he wouldn't see him,
yeah, you know, and I praise God every day. And then about 6 months later, I remember we were in a service and he comes in, he came in late, and he came in and he sat right down on the front row right in front of me as I was leading worship. Mm. And he had this blank stare in his face, and he had this emptiness of like, I've screwed it again. I've messed it up again.
And it broke him.
It did. It did. And then he lived about another 18 months, maybe 2 years after that.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him after the service that night, and I said, what's going on, man? He said, I got cancer. And he said, and the only thing that I knew that I could deal with it was to use again. Mm. He said, man, I was working and I was doing my job well. I'd actually gotten a raise at work and I could afford my own place. And it was right down the street from my kids.
Oh.
And I was moving to that. I was packing things up. What little belongings he had. He said, I was moving things up and went to the doctor. And the doctor told him that he had colon cancer.
That's hard.
And the only way that he knew to deal with it was to go back to the original pain that put him in the original spot of his emptiness the whole time.
Well, you know, and you think about a lot of people who have been locked up for a long period of time,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, it's not that they get out and don't want to be good people.
Right.
Right? But they have built this life, this security blanket.
Right. Inside those concrete walls.
Right. Behind bars.
Right.
Right. Told when they're going to eat. Told when they're going to sleep.
So when they're going to go to the bathroom.
Told when they're going to go to the yard. Right. Mm-hmm. Everything's planned out for them.
Right.
It's not a great place. I'm not trying to, you know, romanticize something.
No.
Right. But they've built this life around that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when they get out of jail, as painful as being behind bars was,
mm-hmm.
as painful as not being able to hug the kids, not being able to go to birthdays, not being able to go to funerals, as painful as all those things were, it's so much easier for them than the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially today, and I say that because if you're somebody who's been in for 20 years and it's time for you to get out, there was no cell phone when you went away.
Mm-mm.
There was no the internet was new, right?
Right.
Maybe there was a cell phone, but it was what today,
it was about this big.
What today's world is, and the society of today is so much drastically different that they're not prepared to come out.
They're not.
Right. We're not doing them any service. I want them to be free. I want them to be out. I want them to be, you know, able to be upstanding members of society if they've done their time.
Right.
Right. They deserve it. They've done it. They've paid their price.
Mm-hmm.
But are we helping them? And I don't think we are. And that's why I think the rate of
repeat
offenders is so high,
right?
Because of they know that pain.
Yeah.
They know the pain of being behind bars. They know the pain of that restriction,
mm-hmm.
and that suffering, mm-hmm. and that pain, because they have accepted it and learned it and dealt with it. That pain is much better than the pain they don't know.
So let's shift gears with this a little bit.
All right.
And let's talk about that spiritual side of this.
Okay.
Okay. So you converted your old life and you've come to Christ.
Yeah.
Okay. And you have, you've lived a life that is not stellar and spectacular in the past, right? And so now then you try to figure out how to not use that kind of language. You figure out not how to do those things that involve, chemicals in your body.
Yeah.
You try to figure out how to do things that are life-changing but glorifying in those things.
Yeah.
And things come up against you. And too many times people end up in a spot to where they think, well, it's easier for me to go back to my old life than it is to live this life for Christ because of all the hurdles, challenges, and things that I have to go through to make this a reality.
Yeah.
And you were talking about how people coming from jail and prison and how that is basically just a debt to pay instead of a rehabilitation thing.
Yeah.
So are we, and this is going to sound, I don't know how this is going to sound. I'm just going to say it because we decided at the top of this podcast
that
we were just going to say it, right?
Just say it.
So are we showing people the right way? Are we discipling is what I'm saying?
No. No, we're not. And I hate that, like, I'm being probably overly emphatic about it, but no.
No, I agree. Right? No, we're not.
I'm going to, look, I'll use me as a perfect example, right? Now, look, before I came to Christ, the F-bomb was like a verb in my.
Right.
Like, I just, every other sentence, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes every other word. It was like,
yeah,
F this and F that,
right,
and F
right.
you and F everybody and.
Yeah.
I don't give an F and
right.
Right. That's what it was. Now, thankfully, even way before I came to Christ, you know, when Linda and I started dating, she's like, let me just tell you something. That F word.
It's got to go.
That ain't happening.
Yeah.
It's got to go. If we're going to be together, mm-hmm. that's not part of your vocabulary anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I didn't get rid of the other curse words.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but the F bomb was gone.
But the F bomb was gone.
Right.
So it was easier to get rid of the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
But we're absolutely not, we're not discipling people, right? I feel like when I came to Christ, there was nobody walking with me,
mm-hmm.
you know? There was nobody there saying, here's something to think about, or here's some pitfalls,
mm-hmm.
right? There were many a times that I thought, man, that pain that I was in before, it was easy.
It was a lot easier. I knew how to walk that.
I'm just going to go back to that.
Right.
Right?
Right.
This is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You've heard me say it, right? Hardest, easy decision you ever make.
Yep.
Or
easiest, hardest.
Whatever. I think it's the hardest, easy hardest, decision. Because it's easy to say, I'm a Christian.
Right.
But it's hard to walk it out. Right,
yeah.
To walk with God.
Yeah, and right. because of that,
it's painful.
It is. It really is. And we talk about you and I have talked about discipling before,
yeah.
and the way that you know that needs to flesh out in everybody's life.
Yeah.
I wish there was. And I've been involved in discipleship groups. I've been discipled. I've been on both ends of the spectrum with that. But I wish there was, and I don't want to say a process to it, but I wish there was. I wish there was something different than somebody being converted, or somebody converting to Christ, or coming to Christ, and. You know, there is the salvation, baptism, and then just hand them a Bible and go, good luck.
I agree. Like, you know, I feel like.
Should be some kind of program or something. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to take away from baptism. It's a huge thing, but that doesn't save you.
Well, and I'm not, right? I'm not
but
saying.
But I feel like before that commitment, before that baptismal, right? Because what it is, it's an outward expression of your faith, like of the commitment you're making.
Okay.
Right? And I feel like before that commitment, there should be like, let's talk for some, let's have some.
Exactly.
Let's have some discipleship.
There should be.
There should be a process for that.
Right.
You know, and I don't really know what that process is today. I know that we don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember when I was baptized at Life Point, you know, they're like, okay, come on in, right? We'd been going to church there for a while, mm-hmm. right? We didn't do any groups. We weren't like, you know, I'm like a baby,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so right before you get baptized, they kind of sit down with you and they're like, hey, we got to ask some questions. And,
right.
you know, I thought, wow, this is cool. And they say, like, you know, you're new and you're this and you're that. And, you know, this is an amazing day for you. And, you know, that was it.
Hmm.
I got baptized. That was it.
No, and there was nothing after it.
There was no, let me reach out to you. Now, maybe there was, and I just don't remember it.
Yeah, it just flew over your head.
Right?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't need all that.
Yeah. Right?
But I think I would have remembered that.
I remember getting a little pamphlet-style book that said, now that I'm a Christian.
Mm, yeah.
And I still have it somewhere. I don't. It's in my attic, probably.
Yeah.
It may be on my bookshelf, but there needs to be something besides just some reading material.
Yeah.
Because had somebody been beside Don.
Yeah.
At that time, to say, let me walk through this with you.
Yeah.
You know, we get bad news. We get something that hits us out of the blue that we're not expecting.
Yeah.
And things turn south and turn sour.
They do.
Had somebody been walking along beside you after your decision to become a Christian, being in that place of whether it's baptism or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Being in that place and knowing the significance of it, but also giving you an idea about some pitfalls.
Yeah.
Some victories, some things that from experience they have seen that you can expect. It's just like a couple weeks ago, we were talking about the guy from AT&T.
Yeah, yeah. 50 days.
Yeah, 50 days clean, right?
Yeah.
So the questions that he had all had to deal mostly with the experience that I had before.
Yeah.
Am I discipling him in that? I think so.
Yeah.
Am I walking through that with him? I think so. You know, had somebody done that with a new Christian yesterday to teach them or to just let them know.
Yeah.
These are things you can expect. These are things we have failed God in this.
Yeah, I agree.
We have failed the church in this.
Absolutely.
Because we haven't shown people the other side of the pain that they're comfortable with.
Right.
And when we do that, when we disciple that way.
Yeah.
I think about the story of Philip and the eunuch. And the eunuch is reading scripture in a chariot. Mm-hmm. And Philip runs up to him and he says, "Do you understand what you're reading?" And he said, "Well, how can I unless somebody tell me about it? How can somebody know the decision that they're faced with being Christ? How can they realize the brevity of that decision unless somebody tell them about it?"
Well, I don't think they can.
It can't.
You know, it's a hard one. It's a hard one to sit and say, how can they understand and how can they know and how do you help them with that pain?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, you know, when I get baptized and there's nothing, it's like, what, you know, I may have told you this story before, but I know you've heard it where Francis Chan had talked about, you know, when he had his church, he had a teenage gang member who came to church.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd been seeing him come to church for weeks and weeks and weeks, and they started talking, and this kid gave his life to Christ, and they baptized him, and he was coming to church a little bit. And after a couple weeks, he stopped coming to church.
Mm-hmm.
Or a couple months, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Francis went looking for him.
Right.
Right. And this is in San Francisco, so Francis Chan goes looking for him, and he finds him. And he says, and he finds him back in the same situation, back with the gang.
Mm-hmm.
So Francis gets him and they, you know, they sit down and they start talking and he says, "What happened?" And the kid said, "You know, when I joined the church, everybody, you know, we love you. This is amazing." He said, "I thought I was getting a family."
Mm.
"Just like when I joined the gang."
Mm.
He said, "But I had nobody."
Mm.
"So I went back to my family. Because when I called them, they came."
Wow.
And so think about the brevity of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That here's this kid, he's like, what I'm doing is wrong, so I'm gonna go to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives his life to Christ, and the church doesn't treat him like family.
Whew.
So he goes back to the gang.
Goes back.
That's the pain that he knows.
Right.
Versus the pain that he doesn't know. And that pain that he doesn't know was lonely. Now, I'm sure that I butchered part of it, but that, you know.
Well, but the
it's
point
on YouTube,
of
but that's the point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
that Francis Chan talks about, it was an interview he did, right? You know, and I think it was after he wrote Letters to the Church.
Letters to the Church, yeah.
Right?
Great book.
Amazing. But, you know, and they were talking about how he walked away from this 5,000 congregation church.
Yeah.
You know, he was spending more money on the production than he was in the community. And
yeah.
And he said, let me give you an example. And he tells that story about this gang member. And I thought, man. And there's, you know, there's a part of me that, you know, going to Newhart, right? For like 3 years, I had a men's group at my house.
Right.
Every Wednesday night. Every Wednesday night. For 3 years. We did study after study after study, right?
Right.
Act like a man, Ephesians, Judges, you know, name it. We Galatians. We did study for 3 years.
Yeah.
Right? When Linda had surgery, not one of them men called me.
That hurts.
When we left the church, not one of them men called. So is that the pain you know? Like, that's pain, right?
Right.
Now, I don't count Carl in that because he was the pastor.
Right. Well, Carl's just Carl, though. I mean,
yeah,
I
but he called.
Carl. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, right. He was he was pastor, right? We were meeting together. I love Carl. Carl called. But nobody else did.
Yeah. It's funny because
I only say that, look, they're great people.
They are.
I'm not here to try to say anything negative, but that's painful. And when I think about the kid who said, my family was the gang and the church didn't treat me like family, it brings that to me. And I'm like,
yeah, we had a similar situation. You know, I told you about 6.5 years at our old church.
Yes.
And, you know, you experience those kind of things when I'm guilty about even as the face of the state of Tennessee for my club, not being really proactive. We'll call it proactive.
I am definitely not proactive, right?
On social media stuff.
I'm not proactive on social media. I'm not proactive on a lot of stuff.
Right.
But as the state face for BFC, I should be more proactive.
And I should be too. But you put something up or, you know, it's your birthday or, you know, something pops up and, you know, 174 people wish you happy birthday. It's great.
Yeah.
You know, but not. And there were some people from our old church, you know, that wished both of us happy birthday. You know, our birthdays are 8 days apart, mine and Rebecca's. But the thing was, from the time that we left that church until birthday, I didn't hear from anybody.
Yeah.
You know,
and if they didn't get the reminder from Facebook, would they have said something?
Probably not. But now every now and then, you know, you post some triumph on Facebook and, you know, some old church member will pop up and go, we miss you.
Yeah.
Really? Do you?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to say that I am, that I'm immune from that. I don't know that I am or not. I know that I don't want to shun anybody.
Yeah.
There are, and you know the story about Forge Brotherhood and
yep. Yep.
You know, there are still brothers in the former that I still talk to.
Yeah.
But I had an example of this this past weekend in Jacksonville.
Okay.
And the former showed up and walked right by us twice. Now, we did end up having a conversation with them both times that they walked by.
Yeah.
But still, you're going to walk by when 2 years ago we were
brothers. Family.
You know, and you'd do anything for me. And now then, because I got different cotton on my back, you don't have anything for me.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it?
So I get that kid.
Yeah.
I get him, you know, and I don't want to hear stories like that.
Yeah.
I don't want to know that there are stories out there like that. Not that I want to be impervious to it. I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, I could see that.
I just don't want it to happen.
But how do you stop it from happening, right?
It's got to come back to discipleship. It's got to. There's no way that you can not have something like that happen if we're following the two greatest commandments. There's no way for that to happen.
I agree with that.
So somebody going back to the pain that they know versus something that's unknown, like Don, for instance, or this kid in San Francisco, either way, or San Diego, wherever it was, had somebody been walking beside either one of those two people, what would the outcome have been, and how would it have been different?
I want to believe it would have been a lot different. Right? If we talk about the gangs, the kid in the gang, right?
Right.
If somebody's walking with him,
mm-hmm.
he's gonna have that family that he's looking for.
Right.
Right. Now, it may not be family, right? It may be different than the gang. It may be whatever it is, right? But he's going to have that close relationship that he feels like that's somebody I can call on.
That I can trust and has compassion on me.
Absolutely.
Right.
Right. And so if that's what you're doing for people, then praise God.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's important to do that.
It is.
And Don maybe wouldn't have used. He would have had somebody he could call.
Right.
Right. And then that period of time that he's having, that he's struggling with this cancer, he could still be clean and live those last however many months with his family,
mm-hmm.
with his kids, instead of at the mission.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
But it was too painful to try that.
Because
nobody was with him.
Right, because of the
arsenal. It was too painful to do it by himself.
Right. So can we answer that question of the pain that we know versus the pain that we don't know? Can we answer it by saying you don't have to walk through that?
Probably.
If you have, and I don't want to say support system because but if we as a unified body would do what we're called to do.
Yeah.
Then there wouldn't be any of that.
I think you're right. That. I think you're right. Now, don't get me wrong. Like I say, hey, the guys at Newhart didn't call. I didn't call them either.
Right. Same thing with faith.
Right. Yeah, and so I can't sit here and throw stones, right? People in glass houses can't throw stones.
Yeah, right. Right.
It hurt. But when were they going through something that I didn't call them?
Or did you know?
I didn't know, to be honest with you. Right. I didn't know. But at the end of the day, I should have known.
Right.
Right? If we're doing a small group together and they're going through some stuff, I should have known.
Right. Right.
Right? So that's why I say I can't throw stones, and I'm not upset at them.
Right.
It was painful then.
Right.
But I also recognize I didn't do it either. I didn't.
True.
I didn't call them. Right? It would have been just as easy for me to pick up the phone and go, I really need some help.
So right? let me pose this question to you, because you just opened something up for me here.
Okay.
So in the not calling, how close are we on time?
It's 44 minutes.
Okay, we're good. We got a few more minutes.
Yeah.
So in the not calling, do we allow ourselves to not reach out when we need help or encouragement or whatever? Do we allow ourselves not to reach out for that because of pride, or because we think, well, I have a new group over here. I have this new circle over here.
Well, for me, it's pride.
Yeah.
All right. I don't think it's because I got this new group or this new circle, right? It's 100% pride.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, it's a huge sin on my part,
mm-hmm.
right? It's something that I work on,
right?
But it's pride. I want to be able to take care of it.
You're right.
I don't want to, you know, for lack of a better term, I don't want to need you.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, today what I realize is that I rob them of a blessing.
Exactly.
Right.
That's where I wanted to go with that.
I rob them. It's not just them blessing me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. I rob them of the blessing of being able to help me.
Right.
And even if it's just to sit there,
mm-hmm.
right. Even if it's just to say, what do you need? And me say nothing.
Right.
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 I've robbed them of the blessing.
Right. And because of that, we have allowed.
Because I want to sit in my own pain.
Right. That's where I was going with it.
Right?
Exactly. We want to sit in the middle of the volcano instead of somebody giving us a way to get out.
Absolutely. Right. I know that that's what I do. Right? And that's why I say I can't stones at those guys.
Yeah, right.
Right? Because I did the same thing. And, and I never called and said, man, I could really use your help.
Yeah. Right.
Right? Which I should do.
Right. But at the same time, though, there are times when we go through something that we don't know somebody else is going through.
Yeah.
You know, and it's because we've lost touch.
But because I've been unwilling to call them.
Right.
They may feel like, well, I'm not going to call him because he's going to say no.
He doesn't want me to call him.
He doesn't want me to call him. Right. He doesn't want help. He doesn't want this. And you know, Don could have been in that same situation.
Could have been.
Right. We don't know. But if we don't pick up the phone and ask.
Mm-hmm.
We're never going to know.
Right. Yep. Never going to know. So, but that gets back to part of what this whole podcast is built on.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
You know, the two greatest commandments.
Love God.
And love people.
Yeah.
And without being able to do that, or we're not being willing to, because we're not unable to.
I am definitely able to do it.
Yeah. But our willingness.
Pride, my fleshly pride,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
prevents me from asking for help.
Yep.
When I need it the most.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Exact same way.
You know, when I need it the most.
Yep.
Like just today, like I could have had somebody run me to go get my truck fixed because I got a new mirror that I'm putting on because a discount tire
went
into the building, right?
So you finally get the mirror?
I got the mirror. I got the check. The mirror's in. You know, Ford's going to put it in. But Linda had an appointment this morning.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, well, I guess I'll cancel my appointment. I could have called you. I could have called Jonathan. I could have called Todd. I could have called Pete. I could have called Joe. I could have called Hammer. Could have called Two Plates. There's like 100 people I probably could have called and said, I need a ride to the Ford dealership or I need somebody to pick me up and bring me home.
Yeah. Don't call Possum right now because all he has is his motorcycle. Okay. Even only has his motorcycle, so don't call him.
Don't call him. But but for whatever – and Linda even – look, she gets on me all the time. She even said, look – you're going to have to ask for help sometime.
Yep.
Right? You're going to have to break down, stop trying to be in control of everything and think you're this manly man
uh-huh.
that don't need anybody. You're going to have to ask for help. And she's right.
Yeah.
Right? I absolutely. But what I do, I canceled my appointment. I'll take it next weekend.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. So you know where pride gets me too many times?
It's not good.
Not being able to say no.
Yeah, I could see that.
I it's something that I've been working on.
Yeah.
And something that I get chastised with a lot by my wife and even the club, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, dude, you just need to say no.
Yeah.
And I have a brother that calls me and goes, hey, I need to ask you something, and no is an acceptable answer.
And you still don't say no.
I still don't say no. Because the fear of letting him down.
Yeah. But that's pain.
It is.
Right? For me, I feel like I am putting somebody through pain by asking for help.
Yep. I'm inconveniencing someone.
Right. But what I'm doing is I'm not causing them pain.
Right.
I am robbing them of a blessing. Yep. And somehow I've got to get that through my thick, bald head.
I do too. My head's not bald, but I have to get it through mine too.
Yeah.
I've told people before, look, I'm gonna pay you for this. No, you're not either. Yes, I am too, because you're going to rob me. And I've actually used that term. You're going to rob me of a blessing of me, you know.
Yeah, so it's okay for us to tell people, don't rob me of a blessing while we rob somebody else.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep. Hello, pot. This is the kettle.
That's right.
And I believe you're still charred.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
It's horrible. It is. Man, this has been awesome. Awesome conversation. It's been a great day.
It's an amazing day. It's been a God-filled day.
It has been.
I appreciate you coming and just doing this with me. Like, we're partners in this.
I'm so honored to be here with you. And when you asked me, you said, I got something to talk to you about. I was like, oh, crap, what's Rick got? You know?
Look, I didn't want to ask. I'll be honest. Well, you know, the pride in me.
But when you did, I told Rebecca, I said, you know, we got something we got to pray about. And she said, what's that? I said, well, Rick asked me to, you know, come on the podcast full time. And she goes, well, sounds like Rick's already prayed about it, and the answer's already there. So
it was, too.
You need to go.
You know, when I saw her at the mission, she's like, oh, there's you, there you are. I'm like, what? She's like, the guy who keeps taking my husband away. I said, it's like 2 days a month. Come on.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. No, she likes to jab like that.
I know she does.
She's
so. Anyway. Now, today's been awesome.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has.
So we'll say again, like, you know, if you want to know, want a topic, you know, a couple weeks ago we talked about joy, and we're still looking for, you know, tell us where you find joy, how you find your joy, right? And so send us an email at hello@nomadpastor.org. Send us some topics.
Yep.
You know, the podcast is growing.
We really look forward to that.
Also remember, we're on YouTube now.
Yeah.
So you can see our ugly faces.
See us exactly how ugly we are.
I watched it the other day. It was rough.
Yeah. I was looking at it going, can we pay some models and like just let them pantomime what we're saying? Yeah,
I don't know.
It's hard.
So look, we hope that everybody has a blessed day and a blessed week. Again, this is Rick and Rob with the Nomad Pastor Podcast.
We want to remind you to love God.
Love people.